Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Now, how did the organisation begin and why your focus on China?
My first trip to China was in 1996, and it just blew me away. The situations I saw in people's homes and villages, the kindness and the generosity that was shown to me, just getting around with the rural people in their home areas, if you like, that encouraged me to go back a year later. And then in 2001, I started going back a few times each year to just do a little bit what I could as I was helping to care for the kids in the orphanages. And that grew to coordinating teams going into China, and then that grew into what China Heart is now, where we're doing orphanage work plus quite a bit more.
Mm-hmm. China has, and it's hard to get an exact figure, no one really knows, between 9 and 15 million orphans.
Yep.
And the main reason they're orphaned is child abandonment. Sadly, 90% of abandoned babies die within 10 days from starvation and neglect. Why are the children abandoned?
Aaron, you're facing situations like, for instance, the one-child policy that impacts so much of China. And if you have the opportunity for only one child, then obviously, in that worldview over there, you want the best child that you can have. And if that child has a physical impediment, sometimes if it's just a girl, not a boy, who in future life won't be able to earn so much and support them so well in their old age, then you're going to want to try for a better child, if I can put it that way. And so many children do get abandoned, left by the side of the road, left out the front of orphanages in all sorts of weather. And yes, the statistics for those who don't make it through are huge. And it's just so big a problem. We don't really know. Nobody knows the full extent of it, because it just reaches out into so many far distant parts of China that nobody can really put their finger on the numbers, truly.
And to add to this, AIDS or HIV is also a growing problem in China.
Yeah, that has been an issue in some villages where, not very well known, but areas where children have been left with no parents, villages almost wiped out in some respects because of just some of the practices of handling blood and so on that have led to a mass situation of loss of life.
Now, there are already a lot of orphanages in China run by Chinese nationals.
Mm-hmm. The government struggle. They do their best. You know, it's not so much a situation of right and wrong that I work in, or my world, if you like, but seeing solutions and looking for those solutions that will help. So we go into orphanages and we take in teams of volunteers who, as I put it, I like to see the volunteers loving on the children. You know, these kids are growing up often with one carer per maybe 10, 20 or more children. And so the carers are overwhelmed by the work. They're tired, they're worn out, they're working 12-hour days, 6 days a week. When we take our volunteers in, at least it gives us that opportunity to provide the carers with a break and to actually spend that time just loving on the children, letting them know they are loved, they are special, that someone does care about them. You know, I have this picture in my mind of a guy who was on our team once, a young Singaporean guy. He'd done his army and military training and service. He was a professional in the law area, very well respected. And yet the picture I have of him isn't behind his desk in a suit and tie, but it's sitting on the floor in the hallway of a darkish orphanage, holding a child, just hugging him all afternoon. And I know in that child's spirit, I'm sure he connected that day with that guy and just knew that he was loved and special. And so that's the primary goal of my teams that go in.
Tell us about the main projects then.
Well, we've got children in a number of areas. For instance, we're serving in a school. Picture a situation where you're 14 or 15 and you're pulled out of school. You actually enjoy school, which is something that not many of us maybe can say. But you enjoy school, but you're pulled out of it because the Cultural Revolution is just beginning. You finally get back into school after some years of working in the brick kilns and pits of rural China. You get back to education, you continue to build up and skill yourself in the finance area. Eventually, you start a school of your own, and you're serving the children back in your original village area. the children are getting a better education in the school that this guy started because he actually cares for what he's doing. He loves the children. He loves what he's doing. He's lecturing himself in the big city, but he's out there with his own school teaching these kids. And so the thing is, we go in there and we provide for them in a physical sense and an academic sense and, yes, in a spiritual sense. The kids were sleeping in dormitories that the windows were broken in. The roof leaked. It snowed outside and the kids got chilblains. We went in and we heated the dormitory, at least put heaters in there and new boilers in there so the kids could sleep and study in their bedrooms. We went in and we gave them equipment to do their science work with. And so through these types of things, we actually can create relationships and build friendships where we can share what's important in our lives with the local folk as well. So we're doing that area and sponsoring children in there. Other village areas where the children are just in extremely poor families. I know kids who have to walk 2 and 3 hours to get to school, but they do it because they just want to get that education so that their life in the future could be something different. We've got work in the Tibetan regions in some medical assistance out there. Very hard to get good medical treatment out there. Can't be afforded. And we have a couple of guys working out there who are just building their place in the community through relationships, their medical background, so they can actually serve in that way and care for the people out there. So a lot of little projects like that is what we're involved in.
So a major focus with children, but also even programs for mothers as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to move out of the school area that we're working in, for instance, and just get to know the parents in that community and see what's going on in their lives. And as they share with us, be able to sow into that. I'm taking a group there in a couple of weeks' time, and there's a lot of trainee doctors in that team. And they're going to come and just share on hygiene and things like food poisoning and the kind of things faced by people in that very, very poor and basic community, if you like.
Where do the finances come for this?
We've got some great supporters, people who sow into it financially. The organisation, basically, we have no wages, we have no expenses in that it's all volunteer work, totally. So essentially everything that comes in goes to China. So we've got our supporters, we have child sponsorships available that people can learn about on our website and so on. So that's really where it comes from. No huge benefactors, no. I'd love to have a couple of Bill Gates or someone with millions of dollars would make it so much easier, but I don't think that's the way that we're destined to serve.
We often hear conflicting stories about just how open China is to particular, especially Christian ministries. Politically, how open is the door into China right now for the work you do?
It's one thing in one area and another thing in another area. Recently, I walked a road that we've just funded that joined up some villages following the earthquake and had a great conversation with a government employee and really just talked as everyday guys walking down this roadworks would do. However, a few weeks later, we had a team in an area that we're supporting 40 or 50 families, and they actually had to leave that area. They were all actually Chinese-looking people on the team, no Westerners as such, but they discovered that that area had been closed to foreigners, and so they were actually asked politely to leave the area, and therefore they just had to get on the bus and go. So in some areas it's one story, and in other areas it's a different situation altogether, and it's extremely hard to know what you're going to face tomorrow in some respects like that.
Leave us with a couple of stories of a child or two, their lives and how they've been changed.
You mentioned earlier about children being abandoned on the road. I know one child and her stepfather, or her foster father in particular, he was moving towns with his wife and he had two boys. And as he walked down the road, he saw a commotion over on the side of the street. And he went across there and saw that it was actually a baby in a box that was causing this commotion. People were coming by, looking, wondering, and walking on. And as he wondered about the situation, as he related it to me later, he said, I couldn't just walk away. I couldn't leave that baby to be abandoned yet again on the ground. He spoke to his wife. She wasn't happy, but agreed for them to take the child with them as they moved. But a couple of months later, and the wife was clearly still unhappy and actually left him, took her boys and left him and the baby daughter alone to fend for themselves. Well, she's now about 12 years old. She only knows him as Bappa. That's her dad. You can see the love in their relationship between the two of them. They live in a cave-type dwelling for which they pay rent for. This is not something they just found on the side of the road, but they live in a cave dug out of the dirt and lined with cement. And she's doing well in school. She's got certificates on the wall. He earns a meagre income about 10 months of the year because during winter he can't work outside. But you can just look in their faces and talk with them and know that there's love there, and that this guy and his daughter, who are Christians, are in a situation where, yes, it's not good, but she's been rescued and her life totally changed. She could have died within hours on that street, but he took her in. That's one story of success. There's another young girl that I know, and I was actually here in Sydney, and I got an email that said that her and some other young girls in the village, she was about 13, had been sent off to work in a factory some hours away. And to be honest, we couldn't quite tell what type of work that they were indicating. We didn't know if they'd somehow been sold into a sex industry or something like that. It was a very convoluted email, if I can put it that way. Well, over a few days, we got a few people together who said, yeah, look, we'll step up and help support that girl financially. And if there's a way that she can be brought out of working in that factory, that 13-year-old working 12 to 14-hour days, 6 days a week, which grew to 18-hour days on busy days and busy schedules, if there's a way we can get her out, we want to. So we talked and talked to the family up there, and finally the family said, yes, look, if you replace the wage that she was earning and she can come out, she can go into this other town, live with her sister and get some education there. Well, Yinji went into that city and spent about 3 years or 4 years in a business education, like a TAFE college, we would call them here, in that kind of environment, business college. Now she's working quite successfully in a graphics and photo industry. She's earning a good wage. And she has a future ahead of her, most importantly. This young girl at 20 years old has a passion and a view to start her own business, her own shop. And when I talked with her, as I did about a month and a half ago in her town, I could just see in her eyes that she has a view to the future and she knows what she wants to do. She too has made a commitment to Jesus. And there's a different walk in her life now and a huge change. There are a couple of good success stories. There's lots of times that are just tough. If I've got a moment for one more, I had a lady on team with me in this orphanage, and the orphanage officials wanted us to take this very young baby and take her down to the local hospital. She was very, very sick. She was in being cared for by some Western medical people. Anyway, we went, and clearly they didn't even feel the baby would last a couple of hours. But the leaders of the orphanage were pushing me to take her down to the hospital. As a Westerner, if I take her, she'll get treated much faster than if one of the local Chinese staff take her to the hospital. So anyway, I went and I thought I should get one of the ladies to come from the team and just care for this child. So I took this lady upstairs, and we just couldn't see that the trauma of taking her in this bouncy bread van, as they're called, just little vans, down to the hospital was going to do any good for the child. The doctors that were caring for her, the medical staff caring, knew that she wasn't going to last long. We talked, we prayed, we held the child, and just kept doing that stalling, if you like, to see what happened, to see if the staff came and pushed us to take the child or if we could just keep stalling it out. Well, I guess after about 20 or 30 minutes, we felt we should start taking the child downstairs anyway, as if we were taking it to the hospital. We got about partway down, and this lady, Liz, a lady from overseas, was carrying the child. She was from England. And we just felt, no, let's just wait here for a bit longer and see. You know, the child was very rattly in her breathing and clearly not in a good way. We stopped there, we kept chatting for a few moments, we kept praying for a few moments, and in that next couple of moments, that child passed into the arms of Jesus, from Liz's arms to Jesus' arms. And it was a tough afternoon to be that close to watch and be involved in that child passing into Jesus' arms, as we say. But we know that he's in, or she's in a better place. But we face those sorts of choices all the time as well. What do we do in this? Do we follow what we're being asked to do, Or do we turn back and say, God, what do you want to see happen in this situation? Which we have to do continually because he has to be in charge of our ministry. There's too many things just like that that happen all the time that we just have to say, God, what do you want to happen in this place, in this day? How do we care for this child in the best way? And the best thing to do for that child that day was tough, but it was to pray through those last few moments of her life on this earth and to let her pass into Jesus' arms from Liz's loving arms, if I can put it that way.
It's not an easy road you're on, David, but I'm glad you are on it. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.